And we're going. We're back here for episode 45 on the Moto 247 show. I'm Ezra Henry, joined by Dean Taylor tonight. And round one for the 250 East guys got underway last weekend. And man, it was a pretty good one. We had a lot of good racing. And I was definitely surprised with the racing for the 250 East. And there's a lot of good takeaways and a lot of surprises, too. And what did you think about some of the guys in the 250 East, especially Hayden Deegan? Did you have him picked up there? Getting fourth on the night?
Oh, dude, I did not, man. Like, after his ride last week in Anaheim 2 and stuff, man, that, like, at least as far as that race goes, man, it looks like the East Coast is stacked, man. Like, it seems like, especially now with the injuries on the West Coast, like, there's only maybe three, maybe four guys that can really be consistent front runners. I feel like in the West Coast right now, like, the East Coast seemed like stacked. They were all seemed really even. Hayden was unbelievable. Max Anstey was like a huge surprise to me. It was awesome racing.
Yeah, it's kind of funny with the whole Deegan thing. Like, he got fifth last weekend, and obviously, like, he should have won that race. Just like going off of talent wise, like, not, you know, he was far back there, but to just see him do better in the pro class is kind of unreal. But and then, like, going back to what you said with it being stacked, like, that's the truth, too. Not like it's a typical 250 East year where there's hardly that many, you know, good guys up front. But, like, I was definitely surprised with him getting fifth last week. I thought he was going to be somewhere near the, like, eighth or ninth range. And I think he shocked us all, except for the Danger Boy fans. But, yeah, he rode really good, and there's so many riders that rode way better than I thought they were going to. Like Tom Vial, man, that guy was on it, and I knew he has the speed. You know, we've seen him over in the GPs, and you know, getting two MX2 titles there, and I didn't know how that was going to transition over the Supercross. It's always interesting to see the GP guys coming over, and even like there's some guys that have so much success over there, then they come over and just can't get the Supercross thing down. And we're talking about it a little bit last week, but. That was one big question mark I had. I had no idea where to put him. Like, I only know what I said last episode about my predictions, but man, he caught me off guard for sure, leading a few laps, and he was in the top three for a heck of a long time, and ended up making a couple mistakes, but not like he was like making a ton of mistakes, at least on screen. He put in a really good ride in him, and yeah, Deegan surprised me too. Deegan had that bobble after the whoops, but like, besides that, it seemed like he was on it, and just seeing footage from qualifying and stuff, he just looked so comfortable out there. It didn't look like some of the rookies that come out and look a little sketchy at all.
Yeah, that was really good. Like, so they're like a solid group. Like, I feel like almost close to 10 guys in that class that are all good dudes and they were all on it, you know. Like, it's crazy to think, like, the class is so stacked right now. You have Michael Mosman, who was a top three guy consistently last year. Man, he, like, struggled, I think, to get – I mean, what did he end up working his way up to? Like, seventh? And he was, like, fighting to get to seventh, you know. It was like that's like a 450, man, where you get a bad start and you're stuck buried in the pack just fighting tooth and nail just to get inside the top 10.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that we had that we thought were going to be up there challenging Lawrence, you know, and – yeah. It's like, damn, he's outside the top five. And
yeah, poor guy. Like, that's got to be a wake-up call for him. Because, like, man, like I said last year, he was a consistent front-runner, you know? I mean, he was a consistent podium guy battling for wins.
Yeah, and, like, this whole class is weird because I feel like everyone had Hunter the clear favorite going into the season, especially after Joe Shimoda got hurt. But not like it's – like, the 250 West, besides Jed, you got, well, like, McAdoo and Hampshire, but it's kind of boring, you know, after – like, you got a couple heavy hitters up front, but besides that, there's not much. Where the 250 East, you got Hunter, which is a hair above, I think, everyone, but still, there's so many guys that could possibly challenge him. Like, I think there's no doubt in my mind that Anstey or Smith or even guys like, I don't know about Mosman anymore. Look, I feel like he can still, you know, be up there, but guys like him, and where he can be up there, and if he has a really good night, and he can catch, you know, Hunter off guard, and possibly sneak out a win, but I guess we'll see moving forward. But, like, there's so many good guys out there right now, and Smith looks solid, and I think everyone was expecting him to be fast, but he honestly looked pretty solid. He didn't look too sketchy and make too many mistakes like he has in the past. But I'm just going out of round one here for the 250 East Coast. I'm definitely surprised with a lot of guys and how they rode, and just really pumped about it, because normally the 250 West is absolutely stacked, and the East isn't that good of racing typically, you know, not all the time, but I'm absolutely pumped to watch, you know, the remaining eight rounds of this championship here. There's going to be a lot of good racing, a lot of good, you know, battling, even if it's not for the win. I think even if it's for third or fourth, there's going to be so many guys going after it. It's going to be really good.
Yeah, I was kind of like really hoping that once Max Anstey got in the second place, I was really hoping he could make a charge and start closing that gap and put on a battle, just because, man, that would have made that race next level to have that sort of battle for the lead going. But he got himself in a second, and he just rode really good and smart and brought home a second place finish. And talk about a guy that just seemed ecstatic with that result. You know, his podium speech, man, it's so cool to see somebody who's so like grateful for that, to be in that position. He's, you know, a guy couldn't be more happy with the second place finish.
Yeah, like we see so many generic podium interviews nowadays, and his was pretty cool. Like, he just was so pumped, and it's kind of funny. He was like, I might have been doing the wrong sport for the last 8 years over in Europe. He was like, I had a lot of success over there, and that was fun. But he was like, man, talking about how he loves Supercross, and that was really cool to see, because, like, he has had a long career and, you know, started off over here a while ago and then going back over to Europe. And he did have a lot of success over there, and I didn't really follow the GPs too much, but I was always, you know, watching him. I was a fan of his and stuff, and to see him come over was really cool. But you know, he hasn't been putting in great rides since he's been here, but then to see him do this in the 250 classes is huge. I'm like, honestly, like, I was a little stumped at why he went down. Like, I thought he, you know, still could have done some damage in the 450 class, but after that ride, I'm like, this makes sense. You know, I think it's a really good fit for him, and it's gonna be some really good racing to watch here.
Yeah, dude, man, hold on, can you imagine the guy on the satellite Honda team, like, pressuring the guy on the factory Honda for some wins? How cool will that be, hopefully here in a couple rounds or something, if he can find a little bit more speed and comfortability?
Yeah, I think between him and like a guy like Jeremy Martin, it's gonna be pretty cool to see. Yeah, because you got him, you know, the satellite guy for Honda up in second, and then Martin finished fifth, and I guess two star guys beat him, you know, with Smith and Deacon, but still, I think, you know, those Martin could beat the star guys and in a certain round, and Anstey can be up front as well. I mean, and be up there and mixing it up with the factory guys, and putting on a show and stuff. And with that, like, with the Anstey's speed, and not like he didn't really seem to fade at all. Not like he showed some good speed and then faded back later on in the main event. Like, he was right there and looking really solid, to where I think it's gonna be really good to watch. And like, if he gets a good start, like, you know, you better watch out. And I think he can be up there battling with Hunter, no problem.
Dude, a guy like Jeremy Martin, like, he just needs to keep feeling good and excited until Daytona, and then, like, man, watch out for him at Daytona. I feel like, you know, he's the outdoor guy, like, you know.
Yeah, it's like, I just want to see him healthy. Like, there's so many years we've seen him with so much speed, and, you know, normally he's he's an outdoor guy, but he still looks really good on Supercross and stuff. But yeah, he comes out swinging, then ends up going down within the first couple rounds. And if he can, yeah, just stay healthy and even, you know, settle for a fifth or something, where he said he was pushing it, trying to get third, and end up going down on the last lap there by the whoops, and you know, dropping back down one position to fifth. But even then, like, don't go all out to where he's risking it all just to potentially, you know, get on the podium or something, to where, you know, like he said going into this year, he went to club for a change up. You know, he just wanted to change. Like, nothing was wrong really with the star program. We all know, like, that's the team to be on right now. It's kind of almost like the new PC, like how Pro Circuit and Mitch's team was for so long, where now it's like everyone wants to go to star. The bike's awesome. It seems like the team's awesome. But he just wanted to change going on end of the year here. And yeah, if he can settle for these fourth and fifth place finishes, I think he can creep up there and then, you know, get more comfortable, get some more seat time and time out there in the races, to where he can potentially be dangerous. Then yeah, Daytona comes around and boom, he's right there and comes out, and, you know, club still needs that win, that first win. So I think we can see that. You know, that team's pretty strong, West and East Coast. So hopefully we can see, you know, at least one of their guys getting it, and it would be really cool.
Yeah, for sure. Like, and like you said earlier too, like, I do hope he just stays healthy for outdoors too, you know, cause like same thing, like him for outdoors on that bike, especially how good he looked even at that first round after not racing for pretty much a year, you know, like first gate drop back in a long time and he looked good, you know? So like, I want to see him in outdoors, you know, two-time 250 outdoor champion. Like, he could really do some damage.
Yeah. It's his time to, you know, to show it right now. And it's most likely going to be their last year on that Yamaha before, you know, that new model comes out. And it seems like they got their bike dialed and stuff. And, yeah, I just can't wait. He just needs to stay healthy. It's like his story, yeah, you know, each year. But if he can do that, you know, I think he can do some real damage and more or less just an outdoor. But even Supercross-wise, even being up there battling for podiums, and I think that'd be cool to see. Like, honestly, it would be cool to see him battling up there for race wins, but which I think he's capable of eventually. But if he gets his, you know, his feet wet, I guess, and stays in the class and not, you know, end up being up on the sidelines, you know. But if he's up there battling for, like, a third place or second or third and just mixing up with the factory guys, and I think that's huge for the whole team. And even points-wise, I think they'll be, you know, pretty good, because I think they're going to be all over. Like, I don't think it's going to be that consistent. Like, you know, you got guys like Anstey and Jordan Smith, you know, Deegan, where I think, and Mosman as well, where Mosman's outside the top five. I think there's no way he's going to be, you know, settling around there for the whole season. I think he's going to be up, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him get a few second-place finishes. But he's been another question mark too, that where over the years he's put in so many great rides where it's like he's one step away from being up there battling with Jed or whoever it is that year, Faulkner or whatever. But it's like he's just one step away, and then each year it seems to be that same thing happening over and over again. And where's he at? He got sixth this weekend, and his start was a 14th place start, so you're almost setting yourself up for failure right there with a 14th. And he worked his way up to sixth, and I'm sure he had a great ride, but it's just kind of hard, you know, when you're starting 14th. But if you can just be up there and battling for the win, I don't think it's going to be like a runaway championship for Hunter like it is for Jet, where Jet, you know, we've seen it in the Triple Crown, how many guys, like, was it that second moto of that Triple Crown where he just passed so many dudes in that shorter race, where I think if Hunter gets a bad start, it's going to be a lot harder to come through these guys. These guys are a lot quicker and more consistent. And even going back down to Chris Blos, we're talking about him last week. He retired and got the call for PC as pretty much the whole freaking pro circuit team was hurt, and he ended up getting 10th right there. So yeah, he put in a really good ride. Another guy I wanted to talk about was Cody Shock. That crash he had was gnarly after the finish line there. Yeah. What did you think about that? That was crazy. He even showed up for the LCQ.
Yeah, that was scary, man. Like, thank God he was all right, you know? Like, it was surprising, you know? I hate to see that. Like, I was questioning. I'm like, I wonder if they're going to put a tunnel after a finish line jump ever again, you know? Like, geez, old Pete.
Like, I was talking about it with a guy at work today where it's like, normally, like, the tunnel jumps are by a corner, right? But still, there's a lot of speed, you know, going through the corners and stuff. But it's slower than landing off a freaking, you know, finish line double and then, like, hauling ass down a straightaway. Yeah. It's just, like, yeah, hopefully we don't see that again, where there has to be a different, you know, somewhere else where they can put it to where it's less, you know, high speeds. Because that, if, you know, that's just something, a freak accident, not like he did a simple mistake, but just stuff like that could happen where that was absolutely gnarly, and that could have went a lot worse than it did. So I think he's just probably banged up right now. I haven't really heard anything on him, but that definitely scared me just seeing that. And I tensed up. I thought something, he was going to be laying down on the ground for a while, and I was surprised that he got up pretty quick.
Yeah. There's like even shoot, like, just like, as I'm rewatching the highlights right now, like, you know, like Braswell didn't even make it into the main, and then, I don't know if you watched the LCQ, but like Marshall Welton, I was, you know, really cheering on for him, and he fought his way back up from a bad start. And he was like right there. I think he ended up finishing sixth in the LCQ. Like, really want to see him in a main to see what maybe he can make happen, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I was rooting for him, and he looked so good last year. Like, he was getting top 10s in the 450 class and the outdoors. Obviously, there's a lot of guys hurt last year for the 450 class, though, but still, he was looking really good. And that one's outdoors, you know, not Supercross. But I thought he was definitely going to be up in the main, and yeah, really unfortunate for him. I think he's going to be up in the main for sure, but just dealing with bad starts there and stuff. But yeah, like, even looking down, I'm looking at the results right now, and Thrasher's down there in 15th, and even, let's say he does get a good start and stays on two wheels, I think he's capable of winning. But who knows with that guy? Like, he's all over the place. He's like, good thing there's not a Rocky Mountain 250 fantasy class. Like, I want to do that for Moto2 for 7 in the future, but this year would be so hard to pick with him. It's like, is he gonna win, or is he gonna get, you know, possibly be like the wild card in 8th place or something? Because he's obviously gonna be a lot better than his result this weekend, which was 15th. But even if you put him up there, he's gonna be like, what, around the top 5, and you're looking at all these other guys in the top 10, and you're like, just, man, it's stacked. And
yeah, like, I'm like looking at this too, and like, I don't want Preston Kilroy. He didn't even start the LCQ, and like, he's, you know, he's riding for club. Like, you gotta imagine he's a main event guy.
Did you hear about his freaking crash?
I don't know. I didn't.
Oh, he launched one of the bull corners and jumped into a cement wall apparently, and broke both arms and both wrists.
Never mind. He's not gonna be in the main. I did not hear about that.
Yeah, there's no footage that I know of. I haven't really looked around too hard for it, but I'm just wondering where he crashed, because I have no idea where he crashed at. All I've heard is it was a bull corner, and he launched it right into a cement wall. And normally you have those nets there. You know, last couple of years they've been running those nets. So yeah. I guess apparently they didn't have a net on that corner, because Yeah, launched and hit the wall pretty hard and broke both arms and wrists. So just a huge bummer for him. He looked really good on that Bar-X Suzuki team, and he ended up getting hurt last year. I think he broke his femur last year, like the first round of Supercross. It was fairly early into the Supercross season. I don't know if he got a round under his belt, but it was something. He got hurt really early on, and this year not getting the ride, but with all the injuries this year, you know, getting the opportunity to fill in for club and not even being, you know, 10 minutes into the night show and stuff, you know, getting hurt pretty bad. It's just really unfortunate to see. This really sucks. Like, the injury bug this year is, it's crazy, because we're only, what, 4 rounds in? And around 5? No, it's, okay, this thing still messes me up. It's not round 5, right? It's round 4. They're counting Oakland still. But yeah, 4 rounds and there's so many guys that are hurt. Like, the 250 East guys were getting hurt before the season was even starting. And, you know, we see that each year with practice crashes and stuff. But normally you start to see it heat up with injuries, and the list gets longer, you know, once we get a quarter of the way throughout the season. And yeah, it's just, I'm honestly speechless with it right now. But we got one guy that's rock solid. Well, I guess we can talk about 450s later, but Eli is, he had the crash last weekend, and he looked really good, but I guess I'll say that for later, because I still have some more stuff to talk about in the 250 class. But yeah, it's just really crazy. What else do we got? Anstey Smith.
One more just general thing about, like, I think both classes in general, how did you like the cheater line they were taking off the start to, like, go around the roller? So you see all the guys that were drifting wide to go around that single right off the start?
Yeah.
I was like, dude, no way.
That was funny. That whole start was awkward, though, and I even talked about it last week, to where they're running a over-under jump, like, right after the hole shot there, which normally you don't see. And I know there's riders on Twitter complaining about it, because, you know, having a full pack of guys trying to go over the tunnel, that's, you know, you're just almost asking for chaos at that point. And then
I mean, they got Christian Crane pretty good.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. They were falling on the face of that tunnel, and you got him, and it was just so narrow in that section too, to where it just seemed so awkward. It almost like reminded me of like that Supercross of the game, when you make a custom track, and sometimes when you make a custom track, you got your first corner and it's super awkward. Sometimes it looks, you know, like a real track, But sometimes it just looks like it's all funneled in, like really, really tight. And then, like, if you're on the online lobby with, like, 11 other dudes, it's just, like, everyone's going down because it's just super tight. And it looked like that exact same thing this weekend, and it was just really weird. And they had people going around, which was really funny to see. But, yeah, that tunnel jump ended up getting Christian Craig there. And, I feel so bad for that dude. Can't really get it going. Like, he's still kicking ass, getting, you know, mid-pack in a 450 main, which is huge, but... It's like, I feel like he can be up there, you know, higher up there, but just horrible.
He qualified like seventh. I ended up picking him ninth for my wild card. And like, didn't he end up going down? And was that in the main that he went down on the start?
Yeah. Yeah. The main, then so they staggered him, and he was dead last in the staggered start.
Yeah. But I mean, he still fought his way back up to, I think, like 11th. So, I mean, that is he should be happy with that ride, even though he fell and had to come from dead last. Coming all the way back up to 11th, that's, like, a huge improvement than, like, the results he's been having, I feel like.
Oh, for sure. And that's what I was thinking, too. It's, like, right around where he was finishing, but, like, he was dead last. And I forgot when they did that staggered start, you know, a few minutes in. But, like, he was dead last there, and he had to start all over again. And yeah, he did put in a pretty good ride. Just, man, like, he just needs to get a start. And hopefully they're getting it more figured out with that bike. I know he was having some issues with that, the Husky and stuff, just doing more testing on that bike and getting that figured out. But it really sucks. And like with that bike in general, like when AP was on Star, he looked so good. Then see him go over the KTM, then I was just, you know, constantly hearing stuff about just getting more testing done on the bike and not being that comfortable and stuff. And he did look really good this weekend though. But and then going back to Christian here, his first year on the new bike and being on the Husky, and just it seems like things aren't clicking right away. But you know, we're only a few rounds in, but it's like I thought he was gonna be further up there for sure.
Yeah,
but even
he's engine his way up there though. I think he's, you know, it's a slow process, which just sucks. It's unfortunate, but yeah, at the same time,
I wouldn't be surprised if him and Adam are creeping their way up there. We're here in a couple rounds. They're more of guys we're talking about being up front, you know?
Yeah.
But hopefully. Yeah, going back to the 250 class, yeah, it was really stacked. It was a really cool story to hear about Michael Hicks. I really don't follow Arena Cross too closely, but apparently he got the championship wrapped up for the Arena Cross. Was it Friday night? And he drove, or him and his dad drove all night to get the Houston, and he ends up getting there. And I'm not sure what he qualified, but he qualified. Where's he at? Shoot, I just lost his name. He qualified 16th, and then he ended up getting P19 in the main. So it was pretty cool to wrap up a championship in Arena Cross and drive all the way. And I think it was, I'm not sure where that Arena Cross round was. It might have been like Memphis or something, but he ended up driving all the way over to Houston and putting it in the into the main and getting a few points was pretty cool to see. But
yeah.
What else do we got? Yeah. We got AJ Cantanzaro getting into the main too, the Moto Academy guy. And Cody Shock, yeah, going back to him for a second, like just really unfortunate with him, and can't really say too much because of that whole tunnel incident, because I can only imagine how sore and his nuts had hurt so bad after running into that tunnel. But it's really unfortunate with him, because I remember when I went down to Daytona, was that 2021, so 2 years ago, and he was running like third, or I think he was in third place for the majority of that main event on that Michael Lindsay Chaparral Honda team, and he looked so good, and that was like the first of the hype that we've heard about him. And later on that year, when he moved up to the 450 class for the outdoors, he was running, and the field was, like, there's a lot of guys hurt in the 450 class that year too, but he was looking so good, and he was talking, you know, everyone was talking about a potential factory ride for him. Then last year, having a really bad injury early on into the year, where it's like, just he couldn't get anything going last year because, you know, just being hurt right away. Then this year, he comes out and then smokes the tunnel. So, I don't know. Like, I'm really curious to see how he's going to do from here on out. If he's going to be just a quiet guy, or if he's going to be, you know, showing that speed and then, you know, having everyone talk have that hype behind him like we've had a couple years ago, to where he's possibly, you know, up there battling for, I don't know, like, I'm looking at the results right now, and, like, I don't know, I don't see him really being up in the top five, though. There's just so many really good guys up front, though. But even if he's just, you know, closer up there, it will be really cool to see, too. But, yeah, Talon Hawkins looked really good, too. They didn't really show too much of him, but, you know, after that Futures race last week and getting third, you know, coming out with a strong P11 here, it was really, really cool to see. He seems like a really good kid and seemed really ecstatic and stuff about being out there and for his pro debut. And Hymus looked really good, too. When he was out front there, and he just looked so solid when he was throwing it down. And he didn't look like a rookie that got a good start and that was sketchy out there as well. He looked super solid. Ended up making a couple mistakes, though. And he ended up, where's he at? He got P8. So, you know, right inside the top 10. But he looked really good. And like, what they're going back to on the Supercross or the broadcast of the team saying, like, they wanted to hold him down, but he just was looking so good on the test track to where, like, we have to put this kid on the 250 East class. And, like, I'm really excited to see what he can do. And I think he can be another guy up there like Deacon, where he's you know, one of these rookies that are knocking on the door for a podium or something.
I'm trying to, like, I mean, shoot, just coming into next week and stuff like that. Like, I guess you just got to go with Hunter Lawrence. Like, I don't know. Like, keep him probably in the lead, but like I said, man, that rest of that podium, I feel like, might be kind of hard to pick, like, instead of some of these guys, like, you know.
And there's so many guys. It could be, like, anyone. Like, it could be Ann C. Smith. Like, Deegan. It wouldn't totally surprise me, but I guess, more or less, I would rather... I'd pick a couple guys over him, but even Hymus or VL looked really good, or you could tell that Tom looked really good except for the whoops. So, and that whoop section was extremely long this weekend too. So, I'm looking up the track map here for Tampa, but yeah, I could see him being up there and just having some more time on that bike too. And I can only imagine what it's like to be going on, you know, the GPs and like transitioning over to the U.S. where everything's just so much different. And even hearing those guys talk about, like, the bike setup in outdoors is crazy. They're like, these guys run their bikes so stiff. And even in the outdoors, I can't even imagine going to Supercross to where it's like a total foreign thing. But here we got Tampa Supercross 2023. It looks like a pretty basic track. You got a sand section there. But I don't know. What were you thinking about the sand section this past weekend? That looked like, I didn't know what to really think about it. I kind of liked it, kind of didn't at the same time.
Dude, for me, that sand section, like, just, I was, like, watching it, like, the way they had, like, the rollers going throughout the turn, like, it looked super difficult. Like, watching those guys, like, you know, you could tell when it looks a little bit tricky for them, like, that it's really freaking hard. Like, I was trying to imagine myself, like, how I would attack through it, and, like, I would have had nowhere near the speed they were carrying through it, you know? Like, I would have felt like I'd have been, like, sitting down and, like, taking each roller, like, the way they were... Some of them, they had some really good lines, and they were kind of, like, almost rhythming through it in a way. Like, it was... they made it pretty freaking hard, you know?
Man, they made it look so easy, too. And then, like, I was, like, even for, like, a good majority of the race in the main, like, I was paying attention so close to that sand section. And watching guys like Tomac, like watching Sexton, he would catch him, and it kind of would piss me off because I was rooting for Sexton. Picked him for my fantasy win, and he was looking so good. He would catch up to Tomac, then he would just, you know, get pulled away right after that sand section. But it's like, he even looked, you know, he didn't look horrible through there, but just Tomac was going through there, and I was watching Sexton so closely. I'm like, I'll watch Tomac on this next lap, and I'm watching Tomac, and he's just like skating through there like nothing. I'm like, oh my God, this guy is just... on rails. He's unbelievable. But like, that was like one thing where I don't know, like, I didn't like it for that reason. For I'm like, I need to have a good fantasy round, and Chase was looking really good except for there. But it was definitely a point in the track to where you can make up a lot of time. Like, let's say if you were bad in the whoops, if you can make up time in the sand section, it's, I think that was really key, because you could potentially make up a hell of a lot of time there.
That was like make it or break it, you know.
Yeah, so this weekend, it's a little bit different. We have a really long sand section this weekend, but it's it's in a rhythm. So it's, I don't know if it's just going to be like, it looks like a jump into like almost like some type of rollers or something, or if they're going to be able to double throughout these things or something. I guess we'll find that out once we start to see some more pictures from the track being built, but it's not going to be like some long sand sweeper like it was this weekend. But yeah, that was led to some really interesting racing too, where you see Sexton, you know, creep up on Tomac, and then a couple times where he got the section pretty good, where Tomac was rolling around the outside, Sexton was coming up the inside, and just then especially that last roller of when it was coming out into the dirt right there, where it seems like even if you can get it good in the inside, I would throw some guys off. And then it's like the LCQ was pretty wild with A-Ray and stuff. And I guess transitioning over back into the 450 class. And what did you think about that LCQ? That last, like, what, 10 seconds of the LCQ with the crash there with Chisholm was unreal. Then I'm a big A-Ray fan. Then I'm like, oh, A-Ray's going to get it. Then he comes around the corner and just, like, launches his bike, you know, running into was it Short there or something? Oh, jeez.
Oh, I was thinking about Kyle Chisholm just like completely blasting him. And man, if he had electric start, he would have made it in, you know?
He's probably so pissed off. Like, I'm seeing videos so far of Chisholm and Roczen where, like, who knows? Like, they probably are, you know, not too happy with the Kickstarter and stuff. But it's, you know, it's whatever. But seeing videos of them just sitting there kicking it and kicking it and kicking it. And then they have to be so pissed off because, you know, electric start's been around for a few years now. And there's, like, they could have been in. Or he could have been in, I mean.
With Kenny on the team, dude, like, I feel like that team's got to have enough funding and backing and, like, almost factory support. And, like, I'm just thinking of back when they put electric start on Travis Pastrana's RMZilla, that was a CR500 engine. But they were able to, like, Travis Pastrana was able to get electric start on that two-stroke. Like, I feel like, you know, like, they had electric start on the DRZ400s back in the day. Like, there's enough, like, engineering and machinists and, like, you know, they have access to all these tools. Why can't they put electric start on that Suzuki, you know? Like, they should have the money and you know, and the engineering to be able to make it happen.
Yeah, and then, like, that gets me, too, where it's, like, not like it's...
Hard. Is it illegal? I don't think it would be illegal to add it. Like, if it is, like, every other bike out there has electric start. So, like, nobody really has the right to disqualify for that, you know?
Yeah, and that's weird, too, like, the big gray area almost, to where that's what I was wondering, too, with AMA. Because, you know, the GP guys, like, we're seeing the new prototype for the Kawasaki's being run this year in the GPs, and, you know, we're seeing preseason stuff with that, but in the AMAs, they're pretty strict about the rules of being, you know, going off production bikes and stuff, and that's what I was wondering, like, could they add that? Because not like they're going with, like, a completely different frame and everything, or it's like just adding electric start would be huge, because, yeah, Chisholm would have been in for sure. He was sitting there. I felt so bad for the dude. I'm a huge fan of his, and I'm like, well, shoot, yeah. And then seeing A-Ray come by, and A-Ray absolutely act like A-Ray was unreal, like, too.
I think in order to add that electric start, they would have to, I believe, like, modify the cases. So maybe that's, like, where the disqualification, you know, like, that's where, like, it becomes illegal. But, like, I've seen and heard of, like, stuff, even I think with, like, BDR, like, custom pit bike builds. One time they built, like, a completely trick, like, basically, YZ150F. Like, they did it out of a TTR 125. And they actually, like, they even said in that video, like, keeping the electric start on that bike, it was lighter than having a Kickstarter on it. Like, just by the time they added stuff, and, like, you know, these batteries especially for the dirt bikes are getting so lightweight. Like, they'd almost be able to, I believe, like, shave weight if they were able to put electric start on those RMZs for the guys. If they got rid of all the kickstart gears and stuff and just have an electric start with a tiny little battery.
Yeah, that's one thing I don't get. Like, even doing that for the production bikes, where it's like Suzuki hasn't been putting that much money into the motocross side of it, where it's like even adding stuff like that, I think, would keep people happy. To where, like I was even looking at Suzuki, like, I'm like, a guy like me, I'm not fast at all. Like, I think it'll be fine for me, but it's like, I think if they added just electric star, a lot more people would be into buying it and be more a little bit more relevant. Not like it'll be that much at all, but you know, still something a little bit better, a little bit more of, you know, modern times.
Yeah, like I even just think about it, like just even if I like, I would be so stoked just to see the factory people do that, just because I love like doing trick stuff and admiring all the mods, you know, cool stuff they do to dirt bikes, you know, like that's why I'm just like, I want to see them do it just out of like the pure like love of like tricking stuff out and making it custom.
That's always cool to see the, sometimes when you get the behind the scenes of the factory parts like, and stuff where it's,
yeah, well, it's really like cool when Geico threw the fuel injection on Carson Mumford's CRF-150. I think we've talked about that before. Like, that was just so cool, you know? Like,
that bike was so tricked out. Like,
yeah.
I totally forgot about that thing. But, yeah, that was, like, the basically the same 150 as, you know, that's been around forever. And, yeah, that thing was just so modded. And, yeah, if they can do something, like, I can't imagine, like, I don't know. Kid Roxon's been pulling this whole Kickstart Kenny thing here for the last couple months, and I don't see that much, that many more posts anymore about that. Kind of funny. Just, I feel bad where it's like, dude, like, I know the bike's, you know, pretty old and stuff, but something like stupid, like issues like that, I would be so pissed if I were them. Like, if there's any way the team could do it, like, I don't know, they'd have to go for it. You'd feel like. Because I think that's a huge thing that's hindering them, you know, or it's going to continue to hinder them throughout the championship here. But it's, I don't know, it's just ridiculous.
I'm almost like, oh, man. Like, even that's like something, like, I wonder if we, like, wrote it into Pulp MX.
Well, the show's right now. What's it? 7:45. No, the show starts in 15 minutes. I'll call in tonight.
Oh, dude, I'll seriously do it too.
Yeah, you should call in.
Like, how do you?
Yeah, I'll be listening. As I'm editing this thing. What do you say?
I've never listened to their show, like, live. I don't even know how.
I really don't. Normally, I save that for work and that lasts me throughout like 3 days, but since it's like 5 hours long, but I've listened to it live a couple times. I think it's on the RacerX Facebook, and then it's on the Pulp MX YouTube, I know for sure.
YouTube?
Yeah, but I never even called them before, so I'm going to, that'd be pretty cool. Ask them that, because yeah, that's honestly a really good question. Something that where I think it's deserved to be talked about, you know? But
I'll write it in right now.
What, do you find their email or something?
I'm gonna send it to them on Instagram, and then like, send them, I might even just like put it in the message, like, because like usually they bring up stuff, I think, if you like send money over YouTube or something.
I wonder what his rant's gonna be tonight. It better be that. It'd be pretty funny. Shoot, even the 450 racing this week was pretty good. Looking at the results right now, and I don't know, like, Justin Cooper definitely surprised me. I didn't really know where to put him, honestly, though. Like, not like I was expecting him to be a certain place, but I knew he can, you know, put in a really good ride. But he looked really good, even getting rocks in there late on into the moto there, and getting P7 on the night. And I think that was really cool for him, just being a part-time guy in the 450 class for the Supercross series, and getting up there on the new bike and putting in a P7 right behind Barsha. And he qualified 13th, so not the best, but, you know, right around where Wilson and Craig are and stuff. But where's he at here? He qualified 13th. He started 13th too. So not like he had a good start and fell back to 7th either. But he put in a really good ride on that star bike. The racing was honestly pretty good. Like, that, the one thing that stood out to me too was that the second section after that sand corner, that rhythm, that quad that was in there, I've seen a few guys miss that, and most of the 450 guys were getting that and stuff. But I noticed Kevin Moran's was getting that, to where he was making up a lot of ground in the LCQ and stuff of being up there, and I think that was a huge separator, and for him to get that as consistently as he was pretty cool to see. He was mixing up there, but he finished pretty good. He got P14 right in front of Shane McElrath right there. Shane McElrath on that twisted teed bike too. But yeah, I'm just so curious right now over the whole Kickstart thing. I'm looking down, I'm seeing, you know, McElrath and Chisholm and Roxon, and normally we don't see that many Suzukis nowadays, and yeah, they're called the RM Army, and they definitely do have an army this year, full of guys there on the Twisted T/ Progressive team. But
like the army's like, I think it was the 250 class. I noticed it was a 250 class. There's a shit ton of Hondas for the East Coast. And then for the 450 class this weekend, at least in the LCQ, I think it was, there was a shit ton of Kawasaki's.
Yeah, there's so many of those. Like, you got guys like Carnot, I totally forgot about him. Like, he was up there consistently last year, and he has his own program going on with the whole OnlyFans gig he has going on with those guys, and coming off a really strong season last year, and then this year, you know, a lot of guys were hurt last year, you know, heading around. It was around, you know, like Detroit when he was doing really good and putting in some really good rides, and he was qualifying consistently for the main events. And there's a lot of riders dealing with injuries, but still, he looked really good, where this year it seems like he can't really get anything going. And I saw a picture from 2 weeks ago, and he got absolutely screwed on the start of the LCQ with someone going down right in front of him. Then this weekend, I have no idea what happened. I think he got another bad start in the LCQ. Like, if I'm remembering this correctly, I remember him coming around on one of the races. I don't know if it was the heat race. I think it was the LCQ, though, where he was coming around that Dumfries corner and coming around and just getting pinched off and getting a horrible start outside the top 10 for sure. And, you know, not really having a chance to get to the main at all, but that LCQ, it makes me want to watch that on YouTube again. The LCQ was a pretty good race. And yeah, Chisholm was right there, and John Short and stuff. That battle was pretty cool to watch. And then A-Ray to be so close, and just to be able to get screwed by someone picking up their bike and launching it. Like, I was looking at, right after that happened, I'm like, Twitter's going to be blowing up right now. And I go on Twitter, and you know, everyone, like Steve at Pulp and you know, all of his guys over there that are huge A-Ray fans are going crazy. And him and Weege and everyone, it was funny to see. But yeah, that really sucked. Dylan Ferrandis had a really bad crash. Did you find the video for that Ferrandis crash?
No, like, I just saw that one little replay they showed where he's in the background. You just watch him kind of, I think he got into the back end of somebody and, like, he smoked his head and just got knocked out, dude. He was sleeping.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. I'm definitely surprised that it was, well, I was about to say surprised that it was only a concussion, but still, like, that's something, you know, really serious, as we all know, and that could be a huge problem. And even, you know, thinking about, you know, Joey that's on here, he's, you know, on here every week, and I know he's still dealing with a lot of issues from just dealing with concussions and stuff, and that's nothing to mess around with and stuff. So hopefully he's okay, and hopefully it's just a couple-week thing to where he has to, you know, be off the bike. But that seemed really scary, and he was out for quite a while laying there, and I thought it was going to be a hell of a lot worse than what it was, but even then, we don't know, I guess, how bad it is right now. So we'll see, but that was just really scary to see. But yeah, he was looking good all day, though. So I had high hopes for him. I thought he was going to start making his way up along with Christian Craig and possibly Adamson Cirillo to be up there and battling for the top five. But man, just really unfortunate. And another guy being added to the injury list early on into the season here. Just really sucks. But going back to Plessinger, I talked about him a few minutes ago, and he did look really good this week, and he looked like he was really on it, qualifying pretty good and having a good start in the main and being up there and battling right around the time of that red flag, and he was on it. And did you have him in your Rocky Mountain picks this week?
Who's that?
Plessinger?
No, I did not.
That's why I don't think I did either.
I had Dylan Ferrandis. He was like my fifth place guy. I took Roczen out, so like I did decent. I had Tomac in first, Sexton in second, I think Cooper Webb third. Oh, and then who else was up in there? I had Jason Anderson in there too. Yeah. So like I'm pretty sure that's how it went. And so like the only one that kind of got me was having Dylan Ferrandis in there for my top five and him going down and AP sneaking in there.
Yeah, I had Ferrandis in there, I believe, and Roczen, which Roczen didn't do too hot at all, but...
No, dude, I mean, sucked. Like, if we're going back, like, if we're going to maybe talk about him really quick, this is about the time he usually starts falling off, and, like, holy crap, talk about Justin Cooper passing him, like, right there at the end. That was unreal, dude. Justin Cooper should feel pretty stoked.
He looked so comfortable, too. He didn't look like a rookie. He didn't look like a new kid on the block. He just passed him like it was nothing.
So we're talking about like how pissed off does Christian Craig have to be where it's like, you know, almost somebody could almost say that maybe Justin Cooper maybe almost has the spot that Christian Craig wished he still had, you know?
Yeah, I'm just...
You know, and then like, look at what he's doing with it, you know? Christian's like struggling, can't even get inside the top 10. Justin Cooper's out there, like you said, just looking like he's just relaxed, man. He looks so just... Look, he wasn't even trying. He just rode his way into seventh place.
It's funny, yeah, it's his first race of the year, too, and normally, you know, being a few rounds in, those guys have an advantage, but he just looked like he was at home, you know, at the practice track at the goat farm doing laps, and I was definitely a little bit surprised. I didn't know where to have him exactly. Like, I've watched him throughout his amateur career and stuff, and seeing the rise later on and stuff, and, you know, going into the pro ranks here, and still, it's still, like, I'm like, if guys like Craig aren't doing too hot right now, and Wilson's, you know, outside the top 10 for sure. Like, I didn't have high hopes of Cooper coming in absolutely, you know, being on fire like he was. So that caught me off guard for sure.
He's always surprised me, dude, because, like, I just watched him ride. And like I said, it doesn't even look like he's trying. He's kind of, like, in my eyes, like a small, kind of scrawny guy. Like, doesn't look that strong. You know, like, everything just seems like it's stacked against him and, like, he, like, surprised me when he got such a good ride getting signed as amateurs because, I mean, he was unbelievably fast. But, like I said, it's just almost like I've always seen him as small. And then he, like, rises to the occasion with his star racing thing. Here we are, like, 6 years later. He's still on the same team. He's got a Supercross title. Like, just he never seems, like, that flashy or that dominant. But he's just always consistent. And like, he always just kind of, you know, not creating a lot of attention. So he's, like, kind of always off my radar, I feel like, and he's always just surprises me.
Yeah, like,
and like even like he seemed like he struggled this year all outdoors, and you're like, oh man, and then comes into the Motocross of Nations and wins, and you're like, come on, you know, like it's like that kind of like always really cool kind of underdog surprises that I think I've come to expect from him.
Like, I feel like he almost shines like a lot brighter when it is the underdog circumstances, because I think everyone has him up there when he was racing 250s to be a title contender for Supercross and Motocross, and, you know, just having a bad year and injuries too during the outdoor season. Then coming in the Motocross Nations, I think, you know, everyone was talking about the U.S., you know, Team USA, but it was almost like they're underdogs as well because they just haven't proved it in so long. And they did have a really good team. You know, everything was pointing their way at Redbud and everything. But still, it's like they can just never get it done. Like, what the hell? Like, even going back to when Cooper Webb was on the team and they ended up throwing it away. And then going back to Justin Cooper a few years ago at that sand track overseas. And it's like just so close. You know, close but no cigar there. But, yeah, like, he just shined at Redbud. And then this week he looked so smooth. That normally when you see, you know, the small guys on the bike, the riding style is a lot different, but like just seeing him, like, definitely have to agree with you. He just looks so smooth on it and just looks like he's floating around out there. And going back to, I remember, I think the first, like, I've seen him throughout his amateur career, but like he was never one of the top dogs. It was always the few factory guys, then it was him. And then I remember seeing him at, I think it was Baja, the first time I really knew this kid had what it takes, you know. I remember seeing him where he just absolutely smoked everyone, and I was like, oh my God, like who in the hell is he? Like, where did that come from? It just caught me off guard, and I'm like, this has to be a fluke, right? And then, and nope, I was wrong. He was, you know, he's looked strong ever since then, pretty much, you know, getting that star ride and then being up there from even when he was a rookie and early on to his pro career, he just looked super solid. He was running up there with Faulkner for a while when Faulkner was battling for titles. And yeah, I think he's the underdog for sure. As we all know, a lot of these guys are training since they've been on 50s and are like, that's their only objective of being a pro motocross rider. And that's like their whole life. It's just consumed by that. And he's one of those guys, one of the few that actually seemed like he had a normal life growing up. And I think we've had to talk about this a few times over the last couple of years in the show here, but you know, he's had a normal life growing up, even went to college and stuff and got a late start, but it seems like he's, you know, like that formula worked for him for sure.
But, yeah, he's wicked. Pretty sweet.
Yeah, so I'm like, kind of stinks that he's not full-time on the 450, but hopefully, you know, in the rounds he does, Star does have him show up for. He puts in really good rides that, you know, they give them no reason to get him back, you know, for next year in the 450 class, because I know they're wanting to dip down for the 250 class because he's eligible to race that this year, try to get a title, and it'd be really cool to see him sign a 450 deal full-time for next year if they could. I don't see no reason why not to, you know, I think he's only going to be, you know, building up from here. Seems like he has a really good base to where he can build from. So honestly, it just seems like a really good kid from what I hear. Man, it seems like he has that grit too. And I think this seventh is going to be huge for him moving forward. He's another guy I'm going to definitely circle and keep a close eye on.
I'm going through all this stuff online, and I just saw that Adam Cicerillo got fined $1,000 this weekend for peeing behind a porta potty.
I saw his tweet on Twitter though, where he was like, "I'm just gonna," I forgot exactly what he said, but just to clear the air. I got fined $1,000 for pissing behind the porta john. Shoot, that's like the thing that happened with Mookie, didn't it? Like Mookie do that like 2 years ago or something.
I think so. That sounds familiar.
Kind of funny, and then I was seeing stuff on Twitter today where it was like hashtag PeteGate. funny. You know what? He got 10th, so another decent ride for him, but you know, he's walking out of Houston healthy and going into one of his home races in Florida, Tampa there. You know, relatively healthy, it seems like, and moving forward, and nothing too flashy yet, you know, like a couple rides where he started up front and was battling up there with the boys, but just I don't even know what to think about him anymore. Just more or less, he just needs to finish the races, you know, and like everyone's saying, including like Ricky and Blair on the broadcast, so just, you know, walking out healthy and building up from there. But I was a little bit surprised about Houston because Joey Savacci ended up getting him on that privateer ride, and well, technically privateer with that Rick Rear racing support. So getting up there and beating Adam, I think that was a little bit of a statement by Joey, you know, and scramble to find a ride and get a get something going for this year, and he ended up beating quite a few, you know, guys that are on factory rides, or not factory rides, but a couple on factory and a couple satellite guys as well. So that was pretty cool to see too.
Yeah. Wish I would have picked him for ninth.
Yeah. My fantasy is messed up. Not too happy. Like today I was talking about it with someone. I'm like, do we just go like the safe pick with Tomac? It's like, whenever I do that, someone like comes out and surprises us, if it's like Anderson or Sexton or Webb or something. But it's like, I don't know, I felt like something different was going to happen this weekend with Sexton, and he was showing it all the way up until the main door. It looked like he was going to get it, but oh well. It's like Tomac's just on fire lately, and I definitely do want Sexton to win and just to spice up the championship a little bit, but it's hard to root for, or against Tomac. I mean, Tomac's just looking so good on that bike, and he's on fire this year.
And especially like answering back to Sexton like that. Sexton qualifying fastest by over a second in both sessions, and then completely waxing Tomac in the heat race. You know what I mean? Like Tomac, like, you know, how many guys like that, you know, that should get into everybody's head. You know what I mean? Getting schooled in your qualifying and your heat race like that, and then be able to line up for the main and being like, oh, whatever, none of that matters. I'm just going to put my head down and do my work. Like, you know what I mean? And then like Sexton got into second place and was kind of, you know, kind of pressuring him a little bit there. And, you know, like I said, Tomac couldn't even be fazed by it. He's just like, whatever, dude, I'm going to go win this race.
Yeah, he's just so solid. And I think so many people were counting him out after the heat race to where I'm like, he's still Tomac, though. Like Sexton is looking really good, but he's Tomac. And sure enough, yeah, in the main event, he was just on fire. Like, none of that qualifying or the heat race ever happened. He just looked like he was on it. And he's just, like, I hope he doesn't retire anytime soon because he's looked so good. And he's one guy, like, you can count on. Like, Sexton, he has the speed and everything. But, like, as a championship guy, normally it's the guy that comes through adversity. And he's somewhat consistent, I guess. Like, Tomac has been known to be all over the place. Like, going back to, like, East Rutherford, I remember years ago on the Monster Cowie team, where he threw it away and when he was racing with Dungy and stuff. But, like, the guy to come through the pack, the guy to come through adversity. And Tomac's almost like the complete package right now to where, you know, like going back to just the starts, like normally his starts to the championship are absolutely horrendous. And this year I'm pretty sure it's his best year on the 450 class yet of coming out of the West Coast swing with the most points. And he's looking solid. And not only that, he, you know, coming back, bouncing back after last week, you know, had that gnarly crash in Anaheim, bouncing back, then coming into Houston and not having a good qualifying session and heat race, like you said, and it didn't really even faze him at all, to where he just came out looking like the typical Eli Tomac that we've been seeing lately. And I think it's really hard, like if I'm a bet man, it's really hard to bet against that guy. He's just, he's on it. And that's why I hope he doesn't retire anytime soon, because he has a good few years left in him. And that's one thing where I'm like, well, I guess we'll see how that plays out. But I did see that one video where I forgot if it was Verb or who posted it. I think it was Dirt Shark that posted it. And they're asking if when he was going to retire, and he just starts laughing. I just looking at the comment section there, and everyone was going crazy. It was kind of funny, but I guess we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, I'm just kind of speechless. He's absolutely, you know, showing, he's schooling everyone. He's showing Sexton and Anderson and Webb. He's just showing them up. And normally it's Webb to be up there. And he's a guy that I thought he was going to be a little bit further up there going into this year. And he does, or he has shown a lot of good rides, but he's still hanging back there a little bit. And he got P5 this weekend. So I guess we'll see how he goes moving forward. But I think he's only going to get better as we go on and head towards the East Coast as well. We got here. But I think we touched on everything I wanted to get to in this episode. Do you know the wild card for the fantasy this weekend?
It's 14th.
14th. Moran's got 14th this week, but I don't feel like he's going to be up there. Oh, maybe.
I picked Shane McElroy just as of right now.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick. We're making our picks. The 450 class, like I said, it's hard to go against Tomac. So I'm going to go Tomac 1, Sexton 2, Webb 3, Anderson 4, Roczen 5th. No, erase that. I'm feeling a little bit risky right now. And Cooper 5th. I might absolutely get burned on this one right now. Well, I'm having Justin Cooper putting a breakout ride here, getting fifth place. And then 14th, I'll go with McElrath as well. He got 15th last weekend, and right behind Moran, so I have a feeling he's going to be up there as well. But fantasy-wise, man, I'm just doing horrible. That's why I don't know if I talked about last week. I'm like, I'm curious. Because I know I changed my picks after the show, too. You know, we always do these early on in the week. And I'm not a guy to pick after qualifying normally, but or sometimes. Not like I'm eyeing that like a freaking eagle and changing my picks, but I definitely change them at least once or twice going into the or going into the weekend. And I'm curious to see how much worse or better I am early on in the week. It's one of those things, like, we're talking about, like, all these guys' girlfriends having absolutely solid picks, and I just think because they don't really think about it too much. Like, they're just, you know, based on facts, so we're like, well, you know, Sexton, you know, or bringing up Anderson or something, where we just go off our gut or just put way too much thought into it. But I don't know. I just need to work on that, but I'm trying to pull up my fantasy. What's your Rocky Mountain 450 picks?
I almost just kind of mirrored the top five from last weekend as of right now. So I'd put, like, Homack first, Sexton second, I think Anderson third, Webb fourth, and or something like that. Or maybe I've had Webb in third, Anderson fourth, and then Aaron Plessinger fifth, and then I said Shane McElrath for 14th. I don't know. That was just kind of a quick one.
Yeah.
To get something in, and I'll kind of see, you know what, especially right now, man, you don't know who might get hurt during the week, or just see what happens during qualifying and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I guess we'll see how this plays out, and Tampa should be a pretty good round, like we said. There's a sand section there, and it looks like a pretty simple track, though. We'll see how this plays out, and it's another open stadium, so who knows, and it's Florida, too, so who knows if it's going to rain or not. So, fingers
crossed. Right now, the weather looks pretty good. It says 40% chance of rain on Friday. But that's right now. So, but besides that, it looks pretty good.
Yeah, that's not what we need at all. Another freaking rain race. Or even, like, the races where, like, Dirtworks has been built, like, building the track and the absolutely shit show of conditions to where, you know, it's halfway decent by Saturday. But it's just, you know, really sucks throughout the week. But I mean, hopefully it stays dry and we have nice weather and no one, you know, knock on wood here, no one gets hurt, and you know, going into I guess it's not wood, but going into this weekend and have some more good racing and the points, like, honestly, like, if you're watching the racing and not paying attention to the points, I feel like you're probably gonna assume that the points gap is larger than it is. Like, it's only at 7 points right now, so we're still, you know, we're in for some really good racing here on out as we're heading towards the East Coast, and hopefully we get some good racing, and it's still up in the air if I'm going to Daytona, so hopefully if I do go to Daytona, it'll be some good racing to watch down there as well. Last time I went, it was raining, it was crappy, but we'll see there. But and plus I get to make it to Detroit, and it's looking like last year I went to Florida on the day of Daytona, so I missed Daytona and got back the day of Detroit, or I was driving back from Florida up to Michigan and the day of Detroit, and that race, I remember watching that and the drive back, and I was absolutely losing my crap. Like, that race was so good, then I'd, you know, get up to where we had no service and the race would cut out, and I'm like on the edge of my seat, and it was the main event. I'm like with all the guys going down, it was absolutely a crazy race. So and hopefully I can get some action or some footage and stuff from Daytona, and we'll have to do a remote podcast from down there using the old setup, the old reliable, but down there, and then come back for Detroit and, you know, have a good time there. That should be some really good racing as well. But anyways, thank you guys for tuning in, and see you guys next week. Peace out. If you guys are looking to get graphics for your bike, your snowmobile, or even get a helmet wrap, I highly recommend you guys check out Prism Designs. Aaron at Prism does an amazing job. The graphics look so sick, and not only do they look really cool, the quality of those graphics are top-notch too, and I have a set on my pit bike, and man, they look cool. I have that Geico theme going on, and well, rest in peace, Geico Honda. Anyways, have that going, and it looks sick, but not only that, but the quality of them is really great, and that's something I was really pumped on, actually, because there's a lot of companies out there that the graphics look really cool, really clean. You know, you can post your picture on Instagram and the bike looks so sick,
but you have a weekend on the bike of doing a couple motos and they're starting to peel and everything, and that's just really frustrating. And that's the complete opposite with Prism. The quality of them is really great, and they're at an affordable price too. So I highly recommend you guys check out Prism Designs. You can find them on Instagram at PrismDesigns_company. And then the link to their website is right there in their bio. So definitely recommend you check out Prism. And I'm also really excited to have a brand new grip company on board with us. I want to give a big shout out to Whiskey Throttle Grips. They make grips and apparel, half waffle, and soft compound grips. Go over and check out their Instagram at whiskey_throttle_grips. Go on there, see what they have going on and all their cool grips. And right in their bio is their link to their website. So go check them out on Instagram, hit that follow button, and click that link in the bio.